is one I've wanted to do for several years. Many of you may know I am an armchair archaeologist. I love to read and study this time period. And so this class kind of gives me an endeavor to really go into my files on pictures and just other documents that I have.
Yes.
It means I'm not a real archaeologist. I just read a lot.
Okay.
So anyway, y'all get to enjoy what I like to do. So what we've done, though, is generally a lot of books, and there are a lot of books, about archaeology in the Bible. But what they will tend to do is that they'll kind of retell the Bible story, and then they'll just show some pictures that are kind of associated with that time period. But what we're going to do, or what this class is going to do, is we're on a journey. So I picked some places that we're going to stop, and that we're going to read the passage. What we do is that we're going to stop at some locations. And what I kind of asked you to do is to read some passages. I pulled some passages, if you will, note in your notebook, especially when you get that. We will start here, that generally you'll have a front page that will give you a time period, will give you a map, and kind of give you a short description. So like in this lesson, we're focused on Abraham. And so this just kind of will remind you, okay, hey, what's the big picture on Abraham, where it is. And then on the next page, typically, you'll have some passages that I'll ask you to read. And when you're reading them, what I would like you to do is say, do I expect, you know, what would I find if I went to dig something up? Would I find anything? So, you know, like with Esau and Jacob, the porridge. You're not going to find that. It's gone. It's not there anymore. We don't even have a clue of exactly where it occurred. But read the passage and just kind of think, okay, what do I expect to find? You just scribble that down, and then we'll see how good a job I do in actually maybe fulfilling what you think we might be discussing in class. Okay, then on the first set of classes, there's kind of a lot of just kind of getting you, and then there should be a folding chair like in the computer room, at least.
Sure.
If not, somewhere.
The prayer room.
Prayer room.
Just snatch one from there.
Okay. So, what I do is I try to give you a little bit of information about some of the archaeology stuff, but at one point, you're going to hit this sign here, digging deeper. Okay, if you're a busy person, if you're just here to kind of see the pretty pictures and all this sort of stuff, you can stop. You don't have to go further. What I want you to do is I really want you to fill this out and do this part. Okay? So everybody can do one page, right? Okay, yeah. So, now, unfortunately, I can't stay in my simple rules. When we get to Joshua, I have pulled a lot of descriptions of the conquest and things like that. So rather than kind of reading several different passages in your Bible, I kind of pulled them all together for you, okay? So that's a little bit longer. Okay, let's see if I can actually get this computer to work. It looks like I've lost ground. Okay. So you have the first six lessons. We will be adding to that. I like appendices, so you're going to get some appendices.
So the rest of the stuff will be coming. I've only had a year to prepare for this class, so.
Okay,
it might come up. Okay, so.
I still have a notebook.
Good. Okay, we'll just work kind of out of the notebook. This here.
So, what we've got here is, okay, you know, does anyone want to be bold enough and tell me why they're sitting in this class, taking this class? Why are you here? Raise your hand. Okay, why are you in the class?
It seems like it just makes the Bible, I don't know, more relevant. It just, you know, when you see the places you're reading about, it really has an impact on you, because I've not been here to see it myself.
And there's a lot I haven't had to see.
James, well, to kind of go along with that, if this is really history, you're going to find some traces. I like to say you won't find porridge, mm-hmm. but you will find some evidence that some civilization exists. It's not Star Wars, so long, long time ago, someplace far away.
Yeah.
Not like there are some other religious books that actually claim things, and they said we can't find any.
Yeah,
not one thing. Remote thing that you said that claimed to even prove that this ever existed or happened. So.
And so, if it, just to let you know, our objective number two fits right into why you're taking the class. Gain an understanding that the Bible deals with real events, real people, real places. We jumped all the way back here.
Okay. I don't know.
Okay. So, one more, get three. I always like at least three reasons. Yes.
Well, I would add on to what they said, but I would also add, since I'm kind of like a, I enjoy reading history. Sometimes it is interesting to read about.
Yes, and we are going to hit a lot of history. So because we are going from Abraham to Paul and John's revelation. So we're going the whole Bible. We're covering it from Genesis to Revelation. 13 classes. What a journey. So what we've got to do is we got to keep reminding you, you know, where are we in location, people, time, and Bible periods, okay? So we got to look at the signposts. We got to see where we're exiting off the road. So if we do that about 12 times, you're going to kind of get a little more familiar with that, right? Kind of repetition and all. So we're going to kind of keep hitting that several times. All right. The other thing is to strengthen our faith. Now, a lot of times, and the reason Bible archaeology started was a desire to prove the Bible. And so a lot of people said, oh, prove the Bible. Well, there will be a couple of classes. When we get to Joshua, because so many people says, oh, that disproves the Bible, we're going to spend a good bit of time there. But really, what will happen, and what a lot of these classes are intended to do, is to kind of confirm, to give another dimensionality, okay? Like Shechem, we're going to stop at Shechem. And Shechem, we're going to look at from the patriarchs to Jesus. Okay, you normally don't do that in a lesson. But there's some interesting things about Shechem. So we're going to now spend there. So we go, sorry, I'm flipping here, is kind of what I did is I read a lot of books. I bought a lot of books. Sarah can attest to that. She suffers. That a lot of them, we say, well, what do you expect from biblical archaeology? It will, you know, show general trustworthiness of the Bible, the historical nature, the reliability of the Bible, confirm Bible events, inform, clarify, correct, illuminate, provide understanding, supplement, complement, enhance. Okay? So, I mean, all of those things kind of come into play in archaeology, and when we're looking at Bible archaeology. Is there a question? Okay, no. All right.
Okay, let's try one more time. Microsoft.
Hey, Danny?
Yeah.
Just standing from the network.
You think the network's messing with me?
I thought you were on 360. I'm trying to connect to the network.
Alright. I plan to roam the internet all during the class. Okay. So anyway, there we are. Okay. It looks like I'm getting closer to meeting this thing up. Okay. One of the things about, you know, archaeology is to remember. Okay. Okay. It's circling. Is that it's fragmented, right? When you go and you dig something up, you're not going to find a complete whole thing. It's broken, it's the remains of ruins, all of these things kind of come into play. So it's just a fraction of the material that's left. So I gave you a whole bunch of definitions for archaeology. Okay? My favorite is telling a story from a square of dirt. Okay? Because that's what archaeology is. I'm going to dig up, actually destroy what has been there. Archaeology is very destructive. I destroy, but I try to document everything. So I dig this hole in the ground. And from that, I find things. And from those things, I try to come up with, well, what story is there? Man. Okay. So anyway,
Danny, I illustrate my archaeology with my desk.
Oh,
it's just piled up with stuff.
Yeah.
But you can go back down about three or four layers and find out what was going on in 2007.
Yes.
unless someone comes through and sort of disrupts your organization.
And so, really, the thing we do associate with archaeology is what's called a tell, T-E-L. Because what would happen is, you know, they didn't have backhoes and things. So generally, every few years, the brick, whatever they built out of, would have needed to be repaired. So what they would do is kind of tear down the house. Oh, hey, we're getting close. We are so close. Yeah, by the end of the class, I'll be functional. Okay, man. Anyway, so again, I shouldn't have gotten here early. So that's what we associate. And a part of that kind of comes from like, started with like Troy, when they discovered Troy, that, you know, said, oh, Troy's a myth. And the guy said, hey, I'm going to go dig it up and see. And he started digging. He found city after city that were on top of each other. So what the ancients would do is, city gets burned, you know, you kind of cap it off, level thing, everything off, and build on top, build on top, build on top. So that forms a tell. So if I'm going through the Bible lands, and I see a hill, it's not a hill, it's a tell. City built up on top. Now what's kind of interesting is some of the most interesting discoveries have come in the last 10 years or so have not been from tells. They've been from, I'm not pronouncing this correct, curvets. In other words, it's sort of like one letter. In other words, it's not tells. It's just basically one level. That it was built, basically abandoned, maybe reused a little bit.
One more.
Front row. All right, front row, there you go. Okay. So, all right, get another chair there. Good. So, and we're going to study some time. There's a curvet found right around where David and Goliath did their little battle. And it tells us a lot about the time of David and things. We're going to have kind of a discussion there. But it's one layer. And so what kind of is crazy about those, people have been going past
this hill for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And you just kind of look at it, martyr archaeologists, they do the survey, say, oh, Hasmonean, something more recent. Because, you know, the wall's 5-7 feet high. It dates from the time of David. So anyway, so there have been some interesting things from this Kermit.
Okay. So, it decided not to wait till the end of class. Okay.
Don't speak too soon.
It's on a different display.
Okay. I had this. I had it. It was working.
It's working. It's just on a different display right now.
Yeah. It just doesn't do me any good right now.
Can Brent say
yeah, Brent, why don't you get this thing up running while I talk to you, please?
Usually,
man, you are the man.
And you're bad.
Okay. So anyway, this is our journey. Okay, we're on a journey, folks. Believe, right? Justine, trying to get this up. We're on a journey. So we're doing our intro. We got the patriarchs, Joshua the conquest, Shechem, a city for all times, David, Samson, and the Philistines, Solomon the builder, Ahab, Hezekiah, Jeremiah. Jesus, in his days, kind of what we found about crucifixion, burial, do a run-through of the cities of Paul and John. We'll kind of finish off our review, is that there was a nice archaeological, about 50 people found outside of the Bible that are in the Bible. So we'll kind of do our review there. Now, I'm not Larry Brown. So, or Barry, who's capable of going through incredible amounts of information. So what we have is I am proposing 4 outside classes. And that's on that first page. And there's already a correction there because we're not going to have class during the congregational meeting. So that class scheduled for the 25th of August, we'll do the 1st of September. So, voluntary. Come if you want, don't if you want, don't want to. Okay, the other thing is journeys involve field trips, right? So we're doing a field trip. Or I'm proposing a field trip. You'll start those around. Is that in LaGrange, Georgia, there is the Bible History Center, which for square foot is packed with incredible amounts of Bible history archaeology stuff.
And any good thing come out of a grain?
The Bible History Center. You would, and it's an industrial park. You're driving around this place, you're saying, where am I? Why am I here? But it's actually part of the industrial park. Yes.
I need my parents' permission to go on this field
trip. Sign a waiver.
No, and again, just knowing that for some of you, you may say, well, I want to bring kids. We can have a discussion, but there's a price there. We have 2 options. We have the expensive option, and we have the cheaper option. The expensive option, if you kind of want to eat Bible food, they do a meal. So you can do that option. The other option is we kind of do a guided tour, and we don't do the meal. So, I mean, I've never done the mill, and I've enjoyed going again and again and again. Yes, Chester.
Would I be available when you go?
We will work on that, yes, sir. We will not deny you. If we have anybody interested in going. If no one wants to go, then we won't do the field trip. So get this back to me by Wednesday. So I have. The thing is we need dates. And this is like a super hot time period to go, so it is hot. But I've done Saturday, so I've proposed some Saturdays there. So just let me know what Saturday you would like to go. Yes, sir. Oh, and put your name. I forgot to put your name on there.
Okay,
yes.
So I'm curious, how much, like, I don't think I'd be able
to. You're not a kid.
This. Okay.
You're not a child.
All right. Well, no, I was being realistic here. I was going to say, how much is it for just one person? Because I don't think I'm going to be able to make this because I got to work on Saturday.
It is, well, it depends. If the group decides they want to do a meal, it's $40 for an adult.
Okay.
If we just want to do the awesome tour, it's $28.
I mean, like, if I went by myself, because I probably won't be able to go.
It's $20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I want to go, but I got work that day. So.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
Work's a meanie. I get it.
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome.
Yeah. Hey, at least it's
okay. So,
all right. So, anyway, we've gone through this. We've already hit that. Okay, so what we will try to do is that we will hit, you know, where we're at. So here, just realize the Old Testament kind of covers this. And then the New Testament sort of covers this.
What are you pointing at?
I'm pointing at Matt Chester.
Okay, so so anyway, we're kind of covering and... you know, Old Testament, New Testament. So we have a good bit of locations, but really we're talking about, you know, really the Mediterranean. Now, most readings, when they're doing bioarchaeology, they limit themselves to Palestine. But what I've always considered, if it's in the Bible, it's Bible archaeology. So, it's Old and New Testament. But, you know, mostly they'll focus on Israel, because that's the Old Testament. Okay. So people. We're going to talk about people. And we will spend one particular class trying to understand the Philistines. But we will be hitting through quite a few different Bible people. So the other thing is our Bible periods. So we have the creation, the fall, the patriarchs, Exodus, conquest, the judges, kings and prophets, exile and return, and then we also get some more. If you will look on the back of your notebooks, I have attempted to give you the different time periods that we'll kind of be looking at, and if you'll notice in that last column, I have tried to more or less kind of match this up. Now, when we're talking kind of, this is when we're looking at Bible periods, we tend not to say the Persian period, right, or that, or Hasmonean. That kind of falls, you know, between the Testaments and stuff. So we'll use a different term, but like I say, an archaeologist, or when you're talking about periods. So one of the things is you dig something out of the ground. Is this Hasmonean? Is this Persian? You know, where is this from? Is this Canaanite? Is this Philistine? So Philistines did some really interesting pots. We're going to be, you know, talking a lot about pots. Well, probably not as much as we should. But when you talk about archaeology, you end up talking about pots because they would be clay. They would break. And when you break them, you throw them away. And so then they kind of build up with time. Sort of like soil, you know, rather than paper, if you were back in these times, it would be a bunch of pot shares where you've written notes and things on. So... that was their post-it notes. They had post-it notes long before we did. They were just broken pots. Okay, so, you know, we're going to, again, kind of to help keep us in place, because we've got a lot of places that we're journeying, right? This journey is sweeping through the whole Bible. So to help you kind of, again, remember, okay, where are we at on the trip? We will use those Bible places. Okay, and then there, sorry. So, patriarchs, Exodus, creation, the flood, it just, they're geological things, but they're not archaeological things. So we're not going to get there, and actually we're just going to pick up really at the main patriarchs. You know, get Abraham, we get a little bit of Jacob in there, some things like that, but really those main patriarchs. That earlier time, we're just not going to get into because there's so few archaeological remains of that. All right, we've got it. Oh, those are some of our... So it just means archos, logos, the study of ancient things. And you got to admit, looking at this class, we're looking at a bunch of ancient things, right? So, and then there... Telling a story based on what you dug up in the square of dirt. Okay, yeah. So, it's a fraction of what survives, a fraction of sites. Okay, we're not too bad. So it's a fraction.
Only a few things survive. And so actually, I read somewhere, and I can't remember where, so I couldn't throw that up. But what they really say, when you're digging something up, you're only looking at about 1.72% of the stuff that existed. Just imagine, 2% is all that survived. And today, I mean, unless you go to our garbage dumps, but if you look at our houses, I mean, we build a new building, we eradicate the old building, don't we? We get excited and find a few parts of some old buildings and call it downtown or underground Atlanta. Things like that. But just to give you a feel, about 50 people that we have found, their names mentioned outside of the Bible. About 2,900 people mentioned in the Bible. That's about 1.7%. So, that we found. And that is really kind of around about what we expect to find just archaeologically. So anyway, I kind of thought that was cool. So here's an exercise. I took a paragraph out of an archaeology book, and I removed letters until only the R and the T was left. We still have 21% of the characters. I never could get it down to 2%. I wasn't going to just have you tease. This isn't, you know, Wheel of Fortune on steroids. But just having the two most common letters, R and T, were down to 21%. How many of you think you can figure out what was there? You know,
it's kind of,
all right. So, if we keep the three most common, we're up to 29%, 128 characters. Still a little challenging there, but a little more. We remove the 13 least used letters. We're at 39%. We just removed the vowels. If we considered vowels as the organic material, I mean, organic material is the material most likely to go away unless burned or pretty rapidly buried. We're at 64%. It's still a little confusing, but if I gave you enough time, I bet y'all could figure that one out, maybe. Okay, so this is what we started with. We went from this to this. Okay?
What are you talking about?
I took a paragraph out of a book, Chester, and I started removing letters. Okay? So, and so the people were looking there, and I'm asking them, can you figure out what the original passage was? And so here is just a quote from the Zenderman Handbook of Biblical Archaeology. And just kind of a hearsay statement that really, if you look at generally what is there, you know, what has been found, and you look at the Bible, it's a pretty good matchup. There are kind of, you know, it's like if you look at the big picture, there's a very good matchup. And we start looking at kind of more specific things, it gets a little more confusing. But I would say probably the reason it gets more confusing is because, again, what do we have? We only have about 2 or 3% of the material. We only have part of the story. So anyway, big picture, we're pretty good. So now the problem that we have with most religions today, most academics today, is they say miracles can't occur. There are no miracles. Okay? I look at the physical world. Do you see miracles going on? They say no. I cannot scientifically prove a miracle. Now, again, scientific method, you've been in kind of discussions there, but that's where they come from. And so, the Bible is full of miracles, right? I mean, there's a lot of miracles that occur, and it kind of has an interesting nature to them. So, the conclusion you have to come to is that, you know, if there's no God, no supreme being, I have to come up with some explanation for the Bible. How do you explain the Bible if there is no God?
You can't.
Well,
Men made it up. They did it after the fact. All right? So prophecies, after the fact. Miracles are nothing more than myths and legends. And so that they will then... So those kind of came over the time. Now, we look at the time period of the Old Testament. Yeah, you could maybe argue this. We're going to look kind of at the New Testament, and this whole argument falls. And I will put forth to you, if miracles can be documented in the New Testament, I mean, you've already proven miracles. So that goes back to the Old Testament. Okay, so, yes.
I think what also kind of flies in the face of that theory is basically... they predicted that Cyrus would base or the birth of Cyrus thousands of years before he was even born. So, I mean, good luck doing that.
Yeah. And you get to Messianic prophecies, and it all's out the window, too. So between New Testament miracles and Messianic prophecies. But then, you know, Jesus is a fake. Jesus, again, he lived his life to fulfill prophecies. Anyway, it's... But you get into Cyrus. So we kind of... Anyway, Evan's class and some other classes, the case for Jesus, we kind of hit some of that. But here's kind of our Bible authority. If you ever get a chance to take the class, I recommend you to take it. But we start, is it possible for a supernatural? If there is, we see order. So, yes, there's intelligent design. Creation, there's a purpose for us to be here. Reasonable to expect a moral law. Miracles and revelations can exist, and we work our way. And so where we're kind of at with this class is that the Bible is inspired, the Bible is accurate, the Bible is reliable. That is our basis. So this is what's called a Bible in spades class. Okay, we have a Bible in one hand, because what are you going to do before we come into the class every time? Read your Bible. And then we'll start playing with the spades. Okay? So, but we're trying to be reasonable because what has happened in the past is people, and I mean this is like the gates of Solomon. Solomon built those gates. But there's a guy, I do not believe in miracles, we'll go down this. And he says, well, I have no radiocarbon dating. I have no proof of this, this, and this. So he sets up a set of conditions. So he says it's unreasonable that if I find these gates in these cities that they say Solomon built, to assume it's Solomon. Well, the original excavator, I find gates. I read the Bible. It says there should be gates. Solomon built them. So from our Bible and faith perspective, it's good proof. But again, when you're dealing with these folks that have trouble with miracles, supernatural, someone, a supreme being, then you've got to be a little more thorough. So we'll try to be a little more thorough. So what there were, it was basically a theory that just as man evolved, also did man's religion. Okay, so there's this concept of evolving religion. So you look at Moses supposedly writing in the 1400 B.C., religion hadn't evolved to that level, so clearly that was written later. So this is called the documentary hypothesis, or JEPD. And it is said most religious folks will say, yeah, that's right. And really, we look at the archaeological evidence and you scratch your head about it. That miracles, Al added after the fact. So here we have, thinking about, okay, when was the Old Testament? I mean, the New Testament, we have some pretty good documentation. We have a good paper trail. But we think about the Old Testament, we just don't have a lot of information. So, first of all, these guys, one of the problems they had, it's discussed in the lesson material, is they thought that an author could only use the word Jehovah. That they wouldn't use more than one description to describe God. So if I find Jehovah, then that was written in this period of kind of the United Kingdom. And then the priest came about because, the people, we really look at like New Testament Judaism versus the Old Testament. I mean, the priests take on a lot more importance.
So all of that came about after the captivity. You know, they made all of this up after the captivity. So, and, you know, that's the kind of doing some of the reading thing to realize here, is that a lot of the times when the people, these Bible scholars or these archaeologists are looking at stuff, they're looking and comparing the religion of a site with the New Testament Judaism, okay? Well, we're going to spend a whole lesson on Daniel and kind of that in-between the Testament period. And the thing to realize is, I mean, when you look at the Old Testament and the New Testament, it is radically different, isn't it? It is a radically different world. So, you know, when you're kind of trying to take, here's New Testament times, okay, so I put this and lay this on the Old Testament. Well, the Jewish religion hasn't evolved or developed to what it was in the times of Herod, or when the temple was destroyed. So some of the readings, when they're doing some of this, you get some of this. But anyway, I go. So anyway, they basically say that at these different times, these different folks added to the Bible 400. They kind of edited and put it all together. And then in the 160s, you've got to throw in Daniel's prophecies. So when we look and let's think about things. First five books, Moses. And these guys kind of said, well, and this is, I think I had a misunderstanding. I'm not sure. I hadn't found the exact reading. But I always heard, well, they said Moses couldn't write. I think that more what the argument was, or at least what the argument is today, or was, or sort of, is that literary writing wasn't going on in the time of Moses, which sort of throws out the law of Hammurabi, the Gilgamesh, and all of this. So, and again, these guys are sitting in an armchair in Germany making this up. Okay? They're not sitting in Palestine digging in the dirt. So just, I mean, this just kind of came up because they're sitting there. How do I explain miracles? Because I don't believe they exist. So just remember, that's where these guys come from. Okay, so we got Moses, we've got Joshua. So someone did the final edit when Joshua died. You know, they get upset. Joshua couldn't have written Joshua because it tells about his death. You know, come on. Someone writes the last paragraph. You know, it looks like, we kind of, because you look at Judges and stuff, it says, till this day, sort of things like that. So, I think most would say that kind of Samuel, the early days of David, is when those, I mean, they were written, but I think the Judges, because the Judges are scattered everywhere, so that when that sort of comes together, Ruth's put in there, so Samuel probably had a good thing. I mean, Proverbs, Song of Solomon, Psalms would have occurred, a large portion of that, in the days of David and Solomon, but even probably some additions to Psalms and some things like that. Jeremiah, pretty much, I mean, if you look at things, would have been the compiler of Kings. And compilers is saying, A, I have all these other sources I'm compiling. And then Ezra, Nehemiah, the Chronicles, kind of, I think, putting together Old Testament. So just kind of, you know, as best we can understand the people and things like that. Now, Jeremiah, you say, well, you mean Jeremiah is going to compile Kings? Well, Jeremiah's a prophet. He's inspired, right? So we kind of have, you know, when we're looking at things, well, I had no problem with Jeremiah compiled. He was a prophet. You know, Ezra, I mean, there was, you know, those servants of God. So, if I don't believe in miracles and stuff, I have a hard time with that. Okay, so how do we, you know, I think, you know, so you would kind of say, okay, miracles, this whole kind of concept here. I mean, you're breaking the laws of physics. Okay, Scotty's involved here. We're breaking the laws of physics. And, you know, having done a little bit of programming, you know, if I have an executable file, it's the law. It's, you know, I can't change
what an executable file does in a program. If I have the source code, it's fair game. The laws of physics don't apply. Oh, God is the greatest programmer ever. Okay? So, you know, as far as sort of trying to get your head around that, all you have to do is look at a computer, and a computer can only count to one. Okay, so ministry of Jesus, 27 to 30 A.D., Paul's missionary journeys, kind of the 40s to 50s, the earliest letters of Paul, around 50. Now, the critics said, yeah, Paul wrote these. Okay? He wrote those epistles. You know, Paul has a tremendous lot to say about the resurrection of Jesus. That's pretty miraculous. So, if Paul wrote in the 50s, Jesus died in the 30s, there are people still alive, you know, who hung around with Jesus. You know, I can't, you know, it is like a huge, vast conspiracy, or Jesus was raised from the dead. Okay? And that is a huge miracle. So, I mean, if I accept those epistles, and Paul talks about the resurrection, which is a miracle, then those miracles we read in the New Testament come into play, that the miracles and the messianic prophecies of the Old Testament come into play. Alright? So, now, just a little side note, some archaeology. They found this bowl in Egypt, a couple hundred, around from 200 B.C., but somewhere around 50 A.D. added, it's a magic bowl, they added the name of Jesus in there. Now, why would anyone add Jesus, and I think the writing pretty well indicates we're talking Jesus, the Messiah, why would anyone do that if not for some of the things being very true that are discussed in the Gospels? Okay, so again, I mean, that's some of the ways that archaeology kind of comes into play. It's just sort of, it does an enhancement, it does a kind of a reinforcement. Does it prove that Jesus did miracles, all of these things? No. But you got to ask yourself, why would anyone mention Jesus down in Egypt and say, hey, this old bowl, I got to add something new because this Jesus dude is doing some incredible things. So anyway, there's just no time for miracles and all of that to be added. Because that's what they try to do. If I don't believe in miracles, I don't believe in miracles in the Old Testament, I don't believe in miracles in the New Testament. I do not believe in miracles. So if there's not time, if there's not this hundreds of years, because, you know, we're going from 1400 to 400, 1,000 years, I have a little bit of a hard time saying no, 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 no. But here, I say, oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure miracles are occurring. There's something about this Jesus guy. And so there's just not enough time. And thus, it kind of dominoes back. Okay, so archaeology. What, we have maybe 2 minutes. You know, 1830s, people kind of walking around the Bible lands. 1860, 1890, they're sending expeditions. Kind of around before World War I, they start digging into Sewell's desk. After the war, the methodology development, golden age of archaeology, and then we got the new stuff. Okay, one of the first guys was this Edward Robinson. He goes around, he's looking, visiting Jerusalem, and he sees this little protrusion coming out of the Temple Mount. And he says, you know, I think that might have been an arch. So it becomes Robinson's Ark. He also located a lot of Bible cities based on just their modern names. So this was part of this. Incredible, right? We look at that. I have a hard time. Yes, Jess.
What's part of what?
An arch. Robinson's Arch. Okay? So anyway, Robinson's Arch. So part of that. In the expedition kind of period, Charles Warren is the guy we think of. British guy went through
And he, at night, would dig around the Temple Mount and actually discovered a lot about the Temple Mount.
But one of the things that we kind of talk about is this Warren Shack, which is part of the Gihon Springs.
And actually, you know, you kind of look at it and says, and I look at how David, you know, the city was taken, you know, coming up the water shaft. And so people say, that's it. It is very unlikely that Warren Shaft was the shaft, but I am very convinced it was some shaft similar to Warren Shaft. Tell archaeology began with a boy, Kendrick. The city of Troy, Petrie did that on some no-name town in Palestine, and saw those tells, and thus kind of the birth of tells. The Golden Age, Albright, Wright, Galen. We're going to come back. We're going to mention these guys, and then the new archaeology. We'll get back on that. But hey, that's basically the last slide. So we made it, despite my computer not wanting to perform PowerPoint today. So anyway, look at those options. Talk to your family. See if you want to do anything. If you don't, that's okay. But it's, you know, even though nothing really good comes out of LaGrange, it is well worth the journey to go down.
Okay.